This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, Whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more five-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain.
As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today. Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. I'm Michael Sacco.
And I'm Joelle Steiniger. Today we talked with Khaled Naeem, the co-founder and CEO of OnFleet. What do you think of this one?
This was great. And one of the core topics that we discussed was turning away customers. And it was interesting to hear that they identified what their long-term vision is. And although they're not, they haven't even built it yet, they know where they want to get and they know what customers can get them there. And so we talked a lot about the process and determining who that core customer was for them and what they're looking for in the future. And so it was very interesting to hear at such a young stage having the five-year vision and already working towards it. So let's get into it.
Customer.io is a modern email platform built for startups. It helps you send the right messages at the right time based on how your customers are using your app. Go to customer.io/rocketship to start sending emails that convert.
All right. So, Khaled, tell us about OnFleet.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me on Rocketship. OnFleet is makes it easy for businesses to manage their delivery operations. So we provide companies that have a delivery component with the tools to provide a better customer experience and also to manage their deliveries more efficiently. So that includes driver apps for drivers for Android and iOS, as well as a dispatch dashboard that runs in any modern web browser.
And so this is for people who already have kind of a delivery service in place, and this software helps them do that more efficiently?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, a lot of our customers are just getting started. We do work with a lot of startups that are kind of planning their upcoming delivery on-demand delivery startup or scheduled delivery startup, and they just don't want to have to build everything from scratch. Usually, you know, they decide that the logistics software isn't really their core competency, and prefer to work with our API to, you know, be able to focus more on things that you know, that matter to them most. So whether it's, you know, making food, you know, baking cookies, building partnerships with local liquor stores, you know, it depends on the business, obviously, but OnFleet allows our customers to focus on their product instead of having to build a lot of this stuff from scratch.
So how are you finding customers who have this problem?
Most of them are coming to us, actually. For the last couple of months, since we sort of launched publicly and announced our funding and all of that, we've had hundreds of companies from all over the world reach out to us, request demos, and we kind of have a sales cycle that we go through to onboard those customers and get them set up with OnFleet. We did start out doing a lot of outreach, just basically emailing companies that we came across in the space and you know, seeing if they were interested in trying us out. It's a free trial, so you know, for 75 deliveries a month, it's totally free. So companies usually get started just kind of poking around the product and seeing if it could be a good fit.
So we talked before the call kind of about turning customers away and how that's actually been an advantage for you guys or has helped you guys. I'd love to hear more about that process and how you determine who's not a good fit for you.
Yeah, that's good question. So, you know, it's obviously really hard to do as a startup to, you know, just turn customers away, but it's something that I think is absolutely critical to be able to focus on building the best product for you know, the customers that you want. So you basically first step is to decide, you know, what types of customers you want, and that is usually based on whatever, you know, metrics that you want to focus on or whatever your long-term vision is. So in our case, we want to move, you know, in the direction of sort of building a driver network, basically providing merchants or retailers with, the ability to offer deliveries to their customers without, having to build their own fleets. So right now, most of our customers have their own fleets, but we're starting to, you know, experiment with connecting merchants with other driver networks and also with local couriers. And so for that, we decided that service businesses, which have similar needs from a, you know, dispatching and tracking perspective, wouldn't be a good fit because they would never convert to, you know, leveraging a driver network because it's not a commoditized, you know, uniform delivery experience. For service fleets, for example, cleaners, mechanics, massage services, we're seeing a lot of these sort of on-demand service companies popping up. They would never, you know, be able to use a driver network because, you know, there has to be a service on the end of it. So we've turned all of those guys away, whereas initially we were actually experimenting with them, as well as some transportation companies. But we've decided to turn them away, which is always, you know, a tough thing to do, but and even turning them away and referring them to some competitors of ours. You know, it's really to be able to focus on your long-term vision and to be able to focus on the features that benefit your target customer base the most. So, you know, the service companies have specific features that they require that we haven't really built. All of the features that we built into the product are specifically focused on delivery of goods. And so we don't want to have to kind of build everything for everyone and not really build the best product for anyone. So I think the best way to do that is to build you know, to really focus on a specific type of customer and not try to, you know, please everyone, at least initially, you know, focusing on a specific niche. And then the kind of emerging markets, so focusing on specific geographies, in our case, mattered a lot. Emerging market companies, so, you know, we've had a lot of companies in India and other emerging markets that want to use OnFleet, but there are a few things that just don't work really well there. You know, addresses and telephony challenges have led us to also avoid, you know, onboarding those guys right now. Mm.
So how did you determine that this was your target customer and, you know, not some of those service-based, which it sounds like there's other people that are servicing them. They're going after that market. How did you determine which market was right for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a big potential market, the service companies. Some companies are specifically just focused on them. Others, most of our competitors work with service companies and delivery companies alike. We decided specifically just due to the direction that we wanted to take the company, going really beyond just a software service product, which ultimately I think is, you know, a bit of a smaller market than building, you know, a driver network or a delivery marketplace. So that was really the driver for that decision. And again, you know, we experimented a bit with some service companies initially. They tend to have lower volumes as well. And our pricing structure, you know, really makes it so that it's often not worth, you know, working with low volume companies, because it's all based on delivery volume.
Hmm. Okay. What is the most exciting, you know, kind of aspect of this, this business for you in terms of, you know, in working in the delivery space?
Yeah, it's a really exciting space. I mean, there's so much happening in the space right now. We see, you know, when we got into it, we were doing something a little bit different. We were building a product called Addy, which made it easier for people to share locations in emerging markets. So we were actually focusing on emerging markets initially, because often addresses don't exist in many of these countries, and it makes it really difficult to order things to your house, and even just to invite friends over to your house for dinner. It's always a bit of a hassle because you have to kind of describe your location using nearby landmarks and obscure points of interest, and that's something that I dealt with growing up in the Middle East myself. So you know, we got really interested in the space through that initial product, and we saw a lot of interesting things happening in the space out here in the U.S. You know, in Silicon Valley, there's just a lot of companies that are popping up that are doing something related to logistics, because, you know, I think the smartphone has really enabled a more efficient logistics operation that can be, you know, that can be built, you know, quite effectively. So, so we've been seeing, you know, this trend and, you know, towards delivery and convenience. I think it's also, you know, smartphones have changed the consumer expectation to a certain degree. I think Uber has been a big part of that.
Sure.
You know, transparency and, immediacy. And a lot of, you know, we felt like a lot of these companies were kind of reinventing the wheel when they, you know, got up and running, and they were building, you know, the same technologies, you know, driver apps and real-time location streaming and, you know, routing and ETAs. And we thought, you know, maybe we could build an infrastructure that these that would allow these companies to get to market much more quickly and not have to spend a lot of time and resources building everything from scratch. And we also basically believe, and what we've seen play out really over the last year and a half since we've been doing this, is that these companies, you know, the local delivery companies are very, you know, it's difficult or at least slow to scale geographically. So going from market to market, city to city, you know, who knows when, you know, someone like a Sprig or Munchery or, you know, these types of businesses will be, you know, in other markets. So there's, you know, so many companies around the world that are popping up that are, you know, building, you know, the Sprig for Paris, for example, or you know, the Munchery of Austin, Texas. And we, you know, we can provide them with the same kind of quality software that those bigger companies have.
So when you're looking at like B2B acquisition, and yet you're kind of an infrastructure API solution, how do you tackle that with small businesses that need this delivery service? But I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like they may not be accustomed to kind of an API-driven solution.
So we don't. So a lot of our customers actually use OnFleet out of the box without any kind of API integration.
Okay.
It's not required, but it does make for a more hands-free, seamless experience where the orders from the customer are propagated into OnFleet directly without any sort of manual task creation or assignment. So it is more effective to build into our API, and we have third-party developers that we work with that are very familiar with our API that we sort of refer some of these smaller businesses to, and they pay them a couple $100 and they build an API integration for them.
Hmm.
And then we get a really good deal there. And so we try to make it easier for businesses to use our API. And we even have a Zapier plugin, which allows for integration into our API through other applications, even as simple as Google Spreadsheets or Wufoo Forms to be, tied in directly with OnFleet. So we do make an effort to make it as easy as possible because we understand that, not a lot of smaller businesses can build into our API. But we work with a lot of larger businesses as well and startups that have a technical team that can build into our API.
Is that something that you found got people excited, or was it an unknown still for people?
The API?
Yeah, the kind of that, because we have Stripe and in the tech world, everyone's very excited about it. But I wonder outside, is that confusing to, just a business owner who needs a solution?
It depends on the type of customer. I think an API, we basically believe that delivery, you can't really build a one size fits all product. So we needed to build an API to allow for a lot more flexibility on the customer end. So they can build their own routing engine. They can, decide on which driver to assign which deliveries to using their own custom logic and then somehow, push that into OnFleet. So we absolutely needed an API. In fact, when we first got started, we thought that we would just build an API for logistics and ended up deciding that we really needed a lot of these other pieces in place as well. I think APIs are starting to become more and more commonplace. I think people realize that getting different applications to talk to one another is definitely the future of technology. A lot of companies are built just doing that one thing, connecting, like Zapier, just connecting various applications with one another. So I think people are starting to understand it more and more.
That's cool. Yeah. So you guys have, I believe, raised a seed round, and you're growing to 12 people. How have you built out that sales process that's allowed you to scale?
So that's still a work in progress. And I think it's always going to be a work in progress. Building an efficient sales cycle, is super important for B2B especially. And I think we've done a really good job at that. We brought somebody on board, pretty early on that just really focuses on sales and, has sort of established this process. We've been improving it over time. It evolves. Over the last couple of months, we've been dealing with a lot of inbounds, which was, we didn't really kind of structure the sales cycle super effectively for inbounds, because initially we were reaching out to a lot of different companies. But at this point, we've got it down to a science. I think we set up quick demos with potential customers after qualifying them and making sure that they're going to be a good fit. And then we provide them with access to the product and sort of, monitor them and make sure that they get up and running effectively. So we don't really call it a sales team. We call it customer success and customer development. Because, you know, people don't like to be sold to, generally, you know, I don't like to be sold to, I don't like it when somebody cold calls me. So we've sort of structured it around what we believe, especially the types of people that we're going after would like, you know, would like to feel or would like to see. So, you know, we pay a lot of attention to that. And I think it's really worked quite well.
Is there anything that product-wise that you guys are using to help qualify those leads?
To help qualify. So, yeah, we use a lot of different tools. We use RelateIQ as sort of the core of our sales funnel. We used outreach.io to kind of set up drip campaigns for potential leads, but we haven't been doing outreach for a while now because of the influx, you know, the inbound leads. And then we use tools like Intercom and Zendesk to support them after the sale. But as far as like qualifying them, it's more of a manual thing. We have a couple of interns on board that spend, you know, that really, you know, qualify the inbounds, make sure that they would be a good fit either through just, you know, asking them a couple of questions via email. We automatically reply to a demo request with a few questions that we get the customers to answer, you know, regarding their type of business that they're running, where they're located, things like that, so we can more effectively kind of qualify them and prioritize them. And then we set up, you know, a demo call after that.
Very cool. What's been the most challenging part of scaling even up to 12 people for you guys?
Yeah, good question. I mean, there's all sorts of different challenges. Every day there's, you know, a new challenge, which is what I really enjoy. I think it's been, you know, keeping me really excited and stressed at the same time. But yeah, I mean, every day is a new challenge. I think building the team is sort of the current challenge, finding great people, you know, really, really solid. You want to really build a super solid core team. So I've been spending a lot of time interviewing and hiring people. We just hired a couple of account managers to just focus on, you know, supporting our customers and making them, you know, helping them use the product most effectively. But that took a couple of months to find those people. You know, we interviewed dozens and dozens of people, maybe hundreds. So, you know, putting a lot of care into building the right team, thinking about things like culture fit and, you know, diversity, while at the same time, you know, looking for the most qualified people. So yeah, I mean, hiring right now is definitely my focus. Whereas, you know, before it was fundraising, and it's going to be fundraising again, in the fall probably. But, you know, I think most sort of startups will find, that building the team, hiring the right people is where they spend a lot of their time.
What are you guys looking for in kind of universally in a team member?
Yeah, so I think culture is super important. I think we've done a really good job at finding people that that we just get along really well with. We have a really cool kind of live workspace here in San Francisco. None of us actually live here, but it's really homey. We have a kitchen, you know, it's like a loft, and it's great to just like feel at home. We have like a nice couch area where people just kind of hang out. And it's important, I think, to bring people on board that you want to grab a beer with and you want to have a, you know, have a good time with, so that they, you know, they don't feel, you know, obligated to come into the office every day without wanting to. So,
right. Is there anything unique you guys are doing to kind of see, sometimes it's hard to get to know someone in a quick interview. Is there anything unique you guys are doing to see if this is a person that you want to not only work with, but, hang out with?
Yeah, I mean, we usually do try hanging out with them outside of work before making an offer. We ask them what kinds of things they enjoy doing. You know, have they been to Burning Man? That's always a good question.
Okay.
Because, you know, co-founders and I went a couple of years ago, and it, you know, had a pretty big impact on the way we, you know, we saw things, especially as it related to the company. So that's always a good thing to, you know, to see in a candidate, but just generally like what they enjoy doing outside of work, matters a lot. And also, you know, how product, oriented are they? So we're a very product focused team. You know, I still sort of, you know, had the product, product management side of things. So that's important. We really want to see that they're super passionate about the product, because that's what we spend, you know, our days and nights thinking about.
So on the Burning Man, we haven't heard that before, although I know it's very popular in the tech, you know, in the kind of the tech space as an event and a getaway and experience. What was it that kind of stuck with you in your business today?
Yes, it's there's an interview that Stanford Business School did recently about that with me, and I mentioned a bunch of things. I mean, I some of the sort of core Burning Man principles, like immediacy and radical self-expression and inclusion. There's like a lot of things that, you know, just being open-minded and getting creative. I think it's there's a lot of different things. It's really hard to explain. I think people that have been often have a hard time explaining sort of tangibly what it is that had an impact on them. It's sort of a, you know, profound experience that I highly recommend for everyone. I'm trying to get my parents to come out
wow.
in the next couple of years, and I think they're open to it. So it's a pretty special place.
Very cool. Very cool. So where do we keep up with you and OnFleet online?
So at OnFleet on Twitter, will be a good place to follow us. We have a Facebook page. OnFleet.com is where you can find us. And people can reach us by shooting an email to contact@onfleet.com.
Cool. And are you on Twitter?
We are. I am, yeah. So my Twitter is at Kentuctek, KENTUKTEK.
Cool. And we'll link that too, so people can keep up with you and what you're doing as well. Well, very cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you as well. Appreciate it. Take care, Michael.
Yes, you too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Rocket Ship Podcast. If you enjoyed it, we have tons of other awesome episodes on our website. Check them out, rocketship.fm.
And be sure to check out our app discount section, where we have discounts on products that we use every day, like Woo Themes, Wistia, Treehouse. Go to rocketship.fm/essentials and get your discounts today. Diamond. Good times, it's gonna be some good times. Man, we used to pull up and let them fight at that hood time. Remember, I used to grab on that ass when it was about that wood time. It had a big walk up tripping, she get that much time. I don't waste time. I don't have patience. Baby. She gonna get on top of the dick and she gonna squish it like squish. She go fast, she speed racer. We go wild, walk to bedtime. She my boss like a compressor. Come here, play, I'm molested. I let her write me my suggestions. Hey. Pop quiz, it's a pop quiz. All my money coming clean, you can't pop this. She got that pussy locked up like Lost Mill. Watch out, come to my lights like a radio. Me and Poppy on the same pills. My diamonds could never stand still. Wait, go and can't come here. I'll always take you back for your sex appeal. Come on, what's a bad one? You say you want give me something long time. Me give you this thing, no something like dry. My make you see me fly. Thugga, thugga. Even in the summertime, me and shout a cutter. Woo! I swear to God, I'ma tell you, dog, got the struggle. Hey. Baby girl, sit it down, you not know like a usher. Hey. Yeah. I told her mama I don't mind what my teeth do. I wanna control you like voodoo. I started screaming free on phone and do loo. Every time I have a good time, do do do. Good time, hey. Come on, but good time, but somebody bind. You say you want, give me something long time. Me do you see more something like dry. My make you see me. I know.
It was good, you know, we enjoyed it, but we never used to like rave too.